Medicare got you confused? Well, you are not alone. I think probably most of the 61 million people who participate in Medicare are confused, just like you, and really a lot of times just like me. So let's break down the wall a little today. And to do so, I've invited J.O. J.O. is a certified financial planner, a chartered life underwriter, and managing principal of GH2 Benefits, which is a benefits consulting company. And he's written a new book, Maximize Your Medicare, Qualify for Benefits, Protect Your Health, and Minimize Your Costs. Well, that sounds good to me. So, Jay, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me back, Steve.
We frequently read or hear in the media that healthcare costs are excessively high in the United States, and that the fix is to change the way that health insurance works. What is wrong with the way that is phrased?
It's an excellent question, Steve. The fact is that insurance is the calculated result from the inputs, which are healthcare costs. And the way that the public debate has it framed is exactly backwards, meaning that as if health insurance is driving the cost of becoming a medical doctor. That's just simply not the case. It is actually the cost of the risk of surgeries, of the probabilities of being ill, of incurring those costs, which drive health insurance costs, not the way that the public debate likes to frame it.
Yeah, and the organization that's providing that insurance, like Medicare, has to figure out what their expenses are going to be, what the possible future costs are going to be. They have to price all that in and come up with a premium. But it's the object on which the insurance is based which drives the cost. Now, what are the biggest drivers of the current increases, large increases of health insurance costs in the United States?
Well, I think that you'll see that recently Kaiser created and released some of the data. And by far, the most is, you know, hospitalization as well as, you know, doctor's visits and procedures. It is not, for example, can be on drugs, for example, or in skilled nursing facility care. But the reality is that's the small minority compared to inpatient hospitalization, that those types of bigger costs, the big bills, if you get hospitalized, come from there, and how those then translate to health insurance.
Okay, so it's not drugs, as is a current political football. It's just your basic, you know, sticks and stones of hospital visits, doctor costs, and the cost pressures on those. You know, it occurs to me that a program that covers 61 million participants, to me, it's amazing. I don't even know how it's possible to truly manage something of that size. How is the system built in order to do that efficiently?
Well, what they do is they are creating basically an indexed list, which is indexed by location. So based on procedure, and this is a very complicated world of medical coding. And so what ends up happening is you receive a procedure in the middle of America, it'll be assigned a cost, and then Medicare will pay based off that cost. And then it will be different, for example, in South Beach, it'll be different in Seattle.
Okay. When should one start thinking, let's say you're not retired yet, but you're approaching age 65 or you see that kind of in your sights, when do you start thinking about Medicare as you approach Medicare eligibility age?
It's a great question. I actually, my own view is somewhere in this 18 months to 2 years. And the reason I say not just in the prior year is there are a number of different implications. The first is tax. For example, the way that people receive their income from qualified or non-qualified funds can affect your Medicare premium. And this is IRMA. For those persons who are in higher income levels, you can get a higher Part B premium and Part D premium.
Yeah, hold on. I don't want to get into detail, but I just want to explain that a little bit. So as you're approaching Medicare, you have to look at what your retirement sources of income are going to be. Some of those, from your savings especially, some of that money will come from taxable savings, money that's already been taxed. Maybe you own stocks or bonds and you're earning interest or dividends. Those are taxed at a certain rate. And some of your money is going to be in retirement accounts, which comes out as ordinary income when you start to pull it out.
Exactly.
Now, the point is that your Medicare premium is dependent upon how much you make, because most people, 93% of Medicare participants, pay the kind of the lower rate, but 7%, over 4 million people, pay a much higher rate per month. I think that comes as a shock to them. So you want to do the math on your income before you start taking Medicare so you know exactly how to position yourself in the best tax way, correct?
That's exactly, you've stated exactly what I, along the lines that I was thinking, which is that, and this is why it's just not 3 months prior.
I see.
Because you can have a different calendar taxation year.
Yeah.
And then because the way that Medicare premiums work is that they're looking back 2 years to your taxable income. And so if you've withdrawn too much out of qualified funds, you have made unintentionally increased your Medicare premiums by incurring, by IRMAs, these extra surcharges, if you will, to your Medicare premium. That's why you really do need more than, you know, 12 months.
It's weird, too, because, well, let's say you retire and now your income drops. They're still measuring your payment on the prior 2 years. So let's say you've been doing extremely well. You made $500,000 a year for the 2 years prior to retirement. And then in retirement, you're getting $100,000 a year. Well, guess what? They're still looking at the $500,000 a year. So you're paying the higher premium. So you want to kind of know that going in. And that's why you want to give yourself plenty of time. Let's move on a little bit.
Okay.
You know, there's all sorts of plans and these Medigap plans as well. What coverage gaps do you think people miss the most?
Well, the first and most basic one is that people believe that Part A, which is hospital, that they read the word deductible and they think that it's a once an annual period, once a year, because that is what they're used to when you bought
True.
Private health insurance or whether you got it from your employer.
Yes.
Under Medicare, Part A, that deductible, the hospitalization deductible, is once per benefit period, which is not calendar year.
Mm-hmm. So if you go into the hospital 3 times for the year past these periods, I guess it's 30 days or 60 days, forget what it is right now for the purposes of time, but you'll have to pay 3 deductibles.
Exactly right. I translate it in public when I speak in public. Benefit period should be understood as medical event.
A medical event. So if you have 3 medical events, you end up in the hospital, the deductible. Now, the deductible is something like $1,300+, right?
It's actually $1,408 in 2020.
It's gone up.
So this continues to creep up, correct?
Yeah.
And these are reset annually by the federal government.
The fact, too, though, is that's just for 30 days. After 30 days, you're paying $350-something a day.
Well, yeah. So once you pay the deductible after the first 60 days, then you end up having to pay the $352 a day.
After 60 days. Okay.
But the main thing here, Steve, is really that people misunderstand the word deductible. So one of the things about the book is to say, look, the terminology may look similar, but under Medicare, they work differently.
The book is Maximize Your Medicare, Qualify for Benefits, Protect Your Health, and Minimize Your Costs. Go back to what you were saying, Jay, about some of the coverage gaps people miss.
I think the other one is that the wrongly placed belief that the Medicare card alone is a complete solution, because Part A, Part B alone have no annual out-of-pocket maximum.
Okay.
So as a result, while you can have this 20%, it can continue to run and run and run.
Mm-hmm.
And so what people think, well, I've received my Medicare card and that's it, and I have health insurance. But you don't have a cap to the downside on financial costs. And this is the critical thing, because then we get calls, I'm 68 years old, I've never been sick, so all I've had is Medicare, that's all I needed.
Yeah.
Well, not exactly. They find out that their downside is quite substantial.
Well, so there are policies in addition to that that are very widely used, Medigap policies and so on. So take us there a little bit and tell us what features are working and what to look out for.
Sure. So there are two big groups, and we'll just keep them to the big groups. Medigap, as you mentioned, this is a standardized set of plans lettered A through N. Now, these plans vary in price. The premiums vary largely by age and location. So in other words, the most efficient carrier and the most efficient plan in Manhattan may or will not be the same one as in Phoenix. That is almost certainly not the case. Mm-hmm. But however, Medigap is outstanding because of its fact that, as I said, it's standardized. In other words, plan N from Steve's insurance company will be identical to that of Omaha Insurance Company.
Okay, stop right there. So are prices the same, even though the benefits are the same?
No, they will not be. So my job is to identify kind of the efficient carrier and the efficient plan in that location.
You know, I think most people do this themselves, and you mentioned that your job is to do this. So who does someone go to if they're looking for advice? Because, you know, going to Medicare is pretty much impossible to, to navigate. So if you want some outside advice, what kind of profession provides that?
Insurance agent. You need to have an insurance agent license in life and health in your state. And they almost also must have permissions from carriers. So the way that I set up, the way that we set up is to make sure that, you know, there are no limitations. So that if you call us from Phoenix, we're going to be able to identify combinations of your location, your age, your sex, and the carriers. And you're trying to find the efficient solution.
Are there additional costs for this service, or is that built in somehow?
It will largely depend. So as a financial planner, the issue is how complicated the matter will be. The first upfront call to us has no cost. It has no cost.
Okay.
If we know that it is boilerplate, you're 65 years old, garden variety, can you just provide the brokerage service? We will do that without cost. Mm-hmm. However, if you're married, you have one person who's retired, one person who's not, with 20 different medications. That is a different story. There will be a one-time fixed cost, irrespective of the number of hours that we spend.
Okay. Well, I mean, you have
sure
a profession and a service to render, and you should be compensated for that. I just think it's important for people to understand where they can go and what the cost may or may not be.
Right.
All right. So once I've enrolled and I have, you know, these Advantage plans or whatever, what else should I know? Now, we've discussed a little bit about, you know, IRMA, I-R-M-A-A. I said, one of my questions was, you know, who is IRMA and why do I care about her? But we kind of talked about that because that has to do with what you're going to be charged as a premium based upon what you earn. Tell me what else we can discuss. For example, what is the state of inflation to these premiums?
So IRMA, if we go first to IRMA, IRMA is going to be now indexed to inflation. So the bracketing used to be fixed in terms of what earnings brackets and what IRMA you were charged. That has now changed beginning in 2020.
You're talking about tax brackets.
That is correct.
Those are now indexed. So as your income rises because of inflation, let's say, theoretically, then it kind of keeps pace with inflation. So that's a benefit to the user.
That is true.
Okay.
On Medigap premiums, what you can expect are two things. Number one, persons are going to get older. And unless you found the fountain of youth, the probability of incurring healthcare costs has increased.
Yeah.
So as a result, premiums increase. In addition to that, the barrier to that, or there are limitations to that, meaning that those increases have to be approved by the state, and the carriers must spend 80% of their premiums on healthcare claims. So the carriers do not simply get to randomly increase your rate. It has to be justified by incurred cost.
Yeah.
Or you get a refund.
All right. Well, you know, we are out of time, unfortunately. That went by pretty fast. The person I'm speaking with is J-O. His last name is spelled O-H. And the book is Maximize Your Medicare, Qualify for Benefits, Protect Your Health, and Minimize Your Costs. Come to our website at stevepomerantz.com and you'll see it, and we'll have a link to it as well. And don't forget, while you're there, to ask us some questions. We'd love to hear your questions. Sign up for our weekly update so you can see what's going on a weekly basis, so you don't have to miss any segments if you just happen not to be around when the show is being aired over public stations nationwide. Come to the website. It's stevepomerantz.com, as I've always told you, and you'll see all that information, including a link to Jay's book, Maximize Your Medicare, Qualify for Benefits, Protect Your Health, and Minimize Your Costs. That's stevepomerantz.com.